What is this podcast? What are we doing? What is, why are we
what
here?
What are we doing?
What is this?
It's a question
What's
I ask myself
Where
every
am I?
Day. This is a podcast called Pizza Toast. It's about YA books and the properties based on them, usually movies, sometimes television. My name is Chrissy.
My name is Phil.
And we can't stop talking about these Hunger Games.
So many Hunger Games to talk about. We're on our, what, our 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? Is this a 6?
This way,
Yeah, third movie.
Yes,
I guess that makes sense.
Yes.
I didn't have to spend that much time doing the math, I swear.
I had to think about it a lot. Somebody watched me calculate a tip recently on my literal calculator on my phone. Math doesn't matter.
Math doesn't matter. No, you don't need it anymore. That's what AI is for.
Yeah, that's what I use ChatGPT for. I think this is GPT, so anyway.
Basic math?
Yeah.
You're like, what's 20% of 1993?
I don't know.
And AI is like, seriously? This is what you want? This is something you could use Google for. I can make a story up about that.
It's not going to be very good, and the syntax is going to be awful.
But you know what is a good story?
Is it Mockingjay Part 1?
Mockingjay Part 1.
Mockingjay Part 1. We're both gone on record as saying that we like when they split the last book in the series into two movies, right?
Yes, I'm a big fan of that. I have gone on record as saying I wish they just split every book into several movies. Or prestige television series, I guess is what they do now. I guess that kind of is what they do.
I mean, I'm not mad about that. I still haven't watched Station 11, but that's my favorite book. And I like that they made it a mini series because it makes a lot more sense than making it into a movie.
Except when you get like too many episodes.
I am.
Or they spend too long between seasons and your child actors have aged 5 years. And all of a sudden the third season of Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials is really odd because why is the teenage girl like 25 years old?
This is one of the fortunate things about something like a Harry Potter or a Hunger Games where they shoot them just all in a row very
yep.
quickly. Like, I mean, year by year made a lot of sense for Harry Potter, given that the movies occur year by year. And the kids never looked the wrong age because they were the right age the entire time.
Right.
Yeah.
I will say that Katniss and Peeta definitely look older to me in this movie, and it
yeah.
might just be the way it's filmed. I mean, they're obviously older. People age. But you noted in the last movie that Hutch is growing into his like frame.
Yeah.
And I think this is like peak Hutch because, well, I mean, we don't really get to see it in this movie because he's CGI'd into a skeleton man. But
they did not make him lose the amount of weight for this that would make him look the way he does, which is
no, he's not gone. Christian Bale. he didn't starve himself just for a bunch of like talking head scenes in a Hunger Games movie. But people, I guess that was a rumor because it's one of the trivia things.
Yeah.
For the thing is like Josh Hutcherson did not actually lose all that weight. I'm like, no kidding, really.
My man does a lot with a little. This is a good movie. That's my upfront take here. It's a good movie. This is a good first half of a movie.
Well, I was going to say, before we jump into the actual film, though,
yes.
we can't cover Mockingjay Part 1 without first covering my favorite actor and yours, Buffy the Vampire Slayer's Danny Strong, the screenwriter of Mockingjay Part 1 and 2.
I almost screamed. Like, I had forgotten when that came up on the credits. I almost screamed.
I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this was like a deal. Like, people were like, Danny Strong? Like, he had written movies by this point, but this was a huge project.
This is a really big deal. Yes, as listeners, I feel like listeners do know this because of the kind of people who listen to this show. Danny Strong played one of the trio on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He played Jonathan.
Uh-huh.
Kind of a nebbish little guy, a little bit of a goobist. Had his day in the sun in one excellent dream sequence episode, and went on to be a fairly accomplished producer and screenwriter.
Yeah, he found that he couldn't get the roles he wanted, so he was like, I guess I'll just start writing. He said, I was approached to pitch on it, Mockingjay. And I just literally holed myself up for a week and came up with a presentation for two movies. I pitched my little heart out and got the job. And yeah, they did. They got his script. And I guess that they did is they just challenged all these screenwriters. They were like, figure out how to divide this into two movies. And they just had a bunch of screenwriters do it. And they bought the best one. And then they rewrote it. Like, from what I can tell,
of course,
they substantially rewrote his words. But go Danny Strong.
He's like, got his name on there. How did any screenwriter not know when they were supposed to split the movie in half? Because Suzanne Collins provided a moment at which you could split the movie in half.
Well, not only that, you can pretty much just crack the book at the middle and it's right there.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's halfway through the book.
Because as I alluded to many times in the prior episode, there's a very easy midpoint in this book. And it's when you find out that PETA has been brainwashed to hate Katniss. We'll get there. I think it would have been a little more powerful if they just cut to black after he strangled her. But when you said
you're going to know in the book when the break is, it's going to be obvious. I thought that was it. I was like, thought it was like, and all of a sudden he had his hands were around my throat. And I was like, ooh, cut to black. Audience screams. What's going on? They give you a little bit more after that, but not much.
They give you a little more after it, and it's some of the padding out and some of the... I'm not even going to call them necessary revisions. I like the flourishes they make in this movie. Mm-hmm. This diverts more from the original text than the first two movies do, and I think it's to its benefit.
I'm just going to come right out and say, this is the first movie in the series that, to me, actually feels like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like I'm watching a major motion picture, sort of war film, like with characters and sets and cinematography. Like, the other two movies look nice and they're well put together, but they felt more like projects. Like, we have to get a good movie, a presentable film of these Hunger Game books. This is the first one that I'm like, oh, they're like just making a movie here. And I think some of that has to do with how much they reworked. And it's not a huge percentage, but the changes they make only make the story stronger.
Mm-hmm. It's not unrecognizable at all, but there are liberties taken that were the right way to go. And part of that is they were able to cast a pretty magnificent actor for Coin.
Yeah.
And they give Julianne Moore so much to do, like so much more than she gets on the page. And they also throw Mahershala Ali in there just in case you needed that.
Yeah.
Which is great. There's not a ton of new faces in this one. Although, like, I guess there's kind of like the documentary squad is there. They just don't do them.
Speaking of the new cast.
Yes.
Because almost everyone from the past who is still alive returns.
Yeah.
But some people who aren't still alive show up in like a couple of screenshots.
Pretty cool.
But we get Julianne Moore. She wasn't the first choice for the role, I know.
Oh, who was?
Hold on. I have it right here. Julianne Moore.
She looks so cool in this movie.
Oh, she's great. She does look great.
At one point, Effie makes fun of her hair and she has no right to do so. Her hair is incredible.
Oh, it's what's her face? What's her name? She's basically Julianne Moore, except grittier. What is her name? She was famous before Julianne Moore, child actress. What's his face? John Hinckley. Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster. That makes sense. This is a very Foster-esque performance. I get that.
Yeah, and obviously the Clarice Starling connection.
Yes.
It is weird that, like, although they have very different careers, they are both, like, what I think of as, like, they're serious actors. Like, I'd be uncomfortable being in an elevator with either of them. Because I wouldn't, like, I'd be afraid that they'd, like, hiss at me or something.
Well, especially after the events of Mockingjay Part 1.
Julianne Moore is, yeah, you said it. She's given a lot more to do. The character is a lot rounder, and not, they cut enough around the story that they don't give anything away about her character in this movie.
I think that's true until the last speech.
Oh, yeah.
Closer. And I think that's done so well. And any time you can cut back and forth between, like, she's not obviously a villain until that point, but, like, a villain speechifying and the main character having, like, the gradual realization that something has gone very wrong and do it well, then I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. It's my favorite thing.
And it's easy to miss simply because you're kind of focused on PETA strapped down to a bed, like having a House on a Haunted Hill freak out. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's, if you're watching this movie without knowing what's going on, I can just see just being like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. You've just seen him like choke Katniss into unconsciousness. So Coin is just giving this like rousing rally, and she could be saying anything if I was in the audience.
Oh no, I'm fully, oh hi, one of the cats showed up. I'm fully convinced that she could convince me to have any political point of view.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because even when Julianne Moore is playing a straightforward, kind, loving character, I still don't quite trust her. Like, I still expect her that she might lunge at my neck with her teeth. Like, she's a very intense person.
Yeah, she's really good. She's my favorite new casting pick. Not my favorite. I think probably best favorite. Gonna have to be Wes Chatham. Love Castor and Pollux. Love my boys.
Yes.
Obviously I need to talk about how I interviewed him once because of like at a press junket for The Expanse, and he is the kindest person I have ever interviewed. Just the nicest man.
He has the friendliest face, like in like his picture on Wikipedia is just like, that guy is, he is an emoji.
Yeah.
Like, he is the happiness emoji.
I'll show you the photo I have with him later, because he is like, that is just his face. Like, it's just what he looks like.
So what were you interviewing him for?
The Expanse. He plays the best character on The Expanse.
Yes. Yes. I only watched season one of The Expanse.
Pretty good.
I read a couple of the books.
It's fine. I've never read the books. But he's right. He's the Camber crew. He is Castor to the guy who plays Foggy Nelson's Alex. Natalie Dormer plays Cressida, and that's a pretty, I'm not going to say it's thankless, it's just a like fairly underwritten and doesn't need to be any more written than it is.
Wait, you can't just skate over the fact that Castor and Pollux, they cast two actors who are not related to each other, but who look like they could be related to each other.
Yeah, they do. They look like, they don't even necessarily look quite like brothers, but they look like cousins.
Yeah, they have, I think it's the eyes and the mouth. There's something about the shape of their face.
You're really focused on Pollux's mouth because he's doing a lot of facial movement without actually speaking, because he's the one who plays an AVOX.
And then this is our first movie where we're actually explained what an AVOX is.
Yeah, that's interesting. We just haven't really heard that, have we?
Yeah, they didn't introduce it in the first movie, and that's the story. That's the book where it actually comes into play the most, and they just cut that character. And it's kind of, not so much in the second movie, but in this movie, I'm noticing a lot of, the first movie kind of may as well not have happened. Like, not the story, but they've just, we are now completely away from the feel, the look, any of the texture of the original movie. The original movie seems very cheap next to what we're seeing now. The quality of the acting, the quality of the camera movement. It's just, it's like night and day.
The set design in this movie is so good.
They grew a warehouse size greenhouse for a year just for this movie. They actually grew the plants in a huge greenhouse for scenes that were cut.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's not a lot of greenhouse.
There's no greenhouse scene in this movie. There is a scene in the deleted scenes, you get to see it, and it is enormous. It's just shelves like going up to the ceiling of plants, like hydroponic plant, like just growing.
I would have loved to show you.
Here's where they get their food. And the scene, I don't even remember what the scene was about, because all the deleted scenes, you go like, oh, I can see why they cut that. I see why they cut it. The only thing that was not like, I was like, oh, that would have been just, there's a shot of people getting their arms tattooed in the.
Yeah,
they don't really
get into the arm tattoo thing at all. They drop you into the middle of things, but it's not like it's not jarring, and you don't really need that much of an understanding of it. But they don't get to the nitty gritty necessarily.
Well, and you see Katniss meet Coin for the first time. Like, they take you. It starts a little bit before the book actually starts, and but I think cutting a lot of that stuff, like cutting the sort of like oppressiveness of District 13. In some ways, it's a bit of a disservice because that's a lot of the character of District 13. But in another way, it really lulls you into this false sense of like, this is almost a paradise. They're underground, but pretty cool place to live.
She gets to go outside. She gets to go home with her best friend, Gail.
Best friend, Gail.
He hasn't built the bombs yet, so they're still on great terms.
There's a delete. That's what it is. There's a deleted scene in the greenhouse where Beatty is sitting there watching hummingbirds. And
that's a good snatch of dialogue from the book too.
Yep. And Katniss comes in. They talk about the hummingbirds, and that's when Gail says, and this isn't in the movie, but Gail says, Beatty's like, you know, you think you could shoot one of those guys out of the sky? And Katniss is like, I don't hunt for sport. And he's like, how about it, Gail? Could you shoot one of these out of the sky? He's like, no, but what I would do is I would set a trap like this. And he lays out, he's like, and then you lure them to the back by slamming the front down so they run towards the back, and that's where you get them. And it sort of shows you, and Katniss gives him kind of a look because he's like kind of, yeah. And it's a really cool moment. I get why they cut it. Like, it's a longer scene and they just didn't need it, but it sort of starts setting up, Gail's kind of thinking more like a ruthless soldier at this point.
No, Gail becomes a tanky in this movie, but it happens gradually enough that it doesn't shock you by the time it occurs. Yeah.
So who else is in this here movie?
People we already know for the most part.
We got Tooch is back, Sutherland is back, Willow Shields is back. You were talking about Natalie Dormer.
Natalie Dormer.
Who I loved in this movie.
She's really good. She doesn't do a lot. She's not there's ever any point, I would say, where she's really like the center point of a scene. But she's very good bench strength. Like, she's really good at supporting.
She said that she would just watch. She would listen to the director talk to the crew, to Francis Lawrence. She would listen to Francis Lawrence just talking to the camera crew, and she would just imitate his cadence and, like, his tone. She's like, I really wanted to sound like I was talking to a crew. Like, she didn't want to sound like a character. She wanted to sound like a director. And I think she nailed it. It's like when you watch a movie and someone's playing a newscaster and they sound like a newscaster, and it's so rare.
Yeah.
And I really like how she sounds like a director. I was really impressed by her having that quality. Also, she looks awesome.
Oh, she looks so cool. Initially, I wasn't wild about... She is kind of like a... She has a side shave before side shaves were really in vogue yet. But she looks like a cool capital person, like a countercultural person. Real Cinna school of dressing. And she has a lot of tattoos on the side of her head that look like vines. And initially you're like, is that just something, like, is that something weird? But no, they go all the way down her arms. It's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in the book her whole head is shaved.
Yes. It looks a lot cooler here. Elizabeth Banks is here in a surprise appearance.
Uh-huh.
When we read the book, I was surprised because I was like, Effie's a huge part of the third one. But no, it's the movie that she's a big part of. It's not the book.
Unfortunately, in order to put her in, we had to lose everyone's favorite character, Fulvia.
Fulvia Cardew is not in this movie.
Yeah, we lost Fulvia, who I don't think we even brought up in the last episode.
No, I think I might have mentioned that there is a nothing character in the same way that, like, Cressida has a right-hand man who, again, like, just nothing in this movie.
Yeah, they wanted to figure out a way to bring Effie back, and they mentioned it to Elizabeth Banks, and she said, I will only do it if we can figure out an intelligent way to bring her back. Not just like shoehorn her in, but they really wanted her. They were like, she's a great character. They brought it to Suzanne Collins, and they were like, can we bring Effie back? And they're like, are you cool with if we like remove Fulvia and kind of replace her with Effie? And Suzanne Collins' reaction was essentially, oh, I guess I should have done that. Like, it only made sense. She's like, oh yeah, that makes actually a lot of storytelling sense, doesn't it?
It's really great because, like, you get to see her participate in, like, the girl bossification of Katniss that is attempted. Like, she is the one who's trying to reprune Katniss into, like, the rebel, the Mockingjay, the face of the revolution. And it also means you get to see her hanging out with Haymitch again. And her interacting with Plutarch, which we didn't get the prior movie.
Right, because in this story, we really get a lot of... it's kind of like when you would go to, like, a birthday party and, like, for the, like, a friend of yours in elementary school, and some of the kids were their friends from church. And some of their kids were like their friends from Scouts. And you're like, oh, I don't know. These people, they are weird. It's kind of, you get that sort of like, there's the capital people who have escaped and they're really out of their element.
Yeah.
There's the refugees from other districts. And then there's the District 13 people. And they are very, it's very clear who is supposed to be whom. But Elizabeth, she plays Effie with such like a, just this like traumatized sadness. Like, but stiff upper lip. Yeah.
No, she's, I mean, Elizabeth Banks is one of my MVPs in this series because I think she does one of the best jobs of transforming with it. And it's like a fairly radical transformation, but it's never, it doesn't ever not ring true. Like, this feels very like how she would be reacting. Oh, also, before I forget, everyone looks so good in these jumpsuits. Like, they're impeccably tailored, and that should not, like, simply should not be. Like,
it reminds me of when you see a celebrity out on the street, and they're wearing, like, sweats and a t-shirt, and you're like, oh my god, but they still look good. And you find out that it's like, oh, because every celebrity has their sweatpants and t-shirts tailor-made. Yeah. And, yeah, so everyone does look very good for District 13. But I will say I appreciated them really toning down, like letting people look kind of tired and beaten up. And the first time you see Katniss, she is literally like in like Freddy Krueger's boiler room, like hiding.
She's not having a great time at the beginning of this movie.
No, they have to like drag her out and like make her interact with humans. She's clearly traumatized, and it's a bit of a downer movie.
This is a bummer movie. There's a part where they're doing like a series of executions by firing squad, and Donald Sutherland, Coriolanus being the pronunciation is just killing me. Like, I can't believe that we have to say that. We're going to have to say it so many times soon.
Coriolanus.
He's like presiding over the festivities. And that was the point at which I said out loud, this is a great children's movie we're watching.
They really add, they let you see a lot that's only implied in the book. You get to see some of the like insurgent actions of the other districts in like really cool scene. And like,
yeah,
which district is it with the trees?
Oh, seven. Seven is
District Seven. Like, you see them chasing workers through the woods. The workers like scale the trees and then drop bombs on the peacekeepers. Like, it's vicious. And you see a lot of people getting mowed down by machine guns voluntarily. Like, they do a really good job of saying this is, it's do or die for the districts at this point. Like,
yeah.
People are literally throwing themselves in front of bullets just so the next row of people can get forward. Like when they bomb the dam.
Which is an incredible scene.
It's amazing. It's horrific, and it's gripping, and it's a suicide mission. You watch these people go on a complete suicide mission because they all get killed when the bombs blow up.
Of course, yeah.
But it shuts off all the power in the Capitol, and it's a wonderful moment.
This is the kind of thing I'm talking about where they've fine-tuned things. They've changed things just enough that this becomes a compelling movie rather than like a good adaptation. Like this is the stuff good adaptations are made of, right? When you cut the things that just simply will not work and then kind of flesh out everything else to cover over what you've cut.
You get to see like the rescue of the victors. You don't get to see them physically, but like you see the infiltration of the like the, where they're being held prisoner.
That is very Zero Dark Thirty sequence.
They tie in the they're like we're gonna have Finnick do his monologue about all the secrets of the Capitol, but we're gonna do it as a way to distract the president so that he's not paying attention to the infiltration. Like they tie a lot of that together really well to make it a more tense moment, and also like as you said, flesh out like the military actions.
Oh, there's a lot of it. And there's also things that are beat for beat from the book, of course, as they've been doing all along. But they're always taken up a notch. Like you have the song, and that is, the hanging tree. And that is what one of the best montages is set to, like one of the rebel montages. And that's the scene I think of when I think of this movie, because that is unlike anything that happens in any of the other movies. It's just a really, this like very, like a seamless filmmaking for this like 1-3 or 4 minute segment. It's so good.
And they tie that in by having that song become the basically the battle song for all the districts. And they changed the lyric of it's not rope necklaces, necklace of rope to a necklace of hope.
Yes.
Like Plutarch is like, yes, like let's do that.
That made me laugh out loud.
And because it's so cheesy, but it works. Yeah. And apparently they didn't know. Apparently they had in real life they didn't know if they were going to do that or not, so everyone had to sing it in two different ways, and at the last minute they decided to do Necklace of Hope, which is weird.
It also doesn't make any sense, really, but it
serves a completely different function in the story, because it has nothing to do with Katniss's father really. No. Or any of that. They turned it into a different thing. Apparently that was the first scene Jennifer Lawrence filmed for the movie, and she was so scared because she hates singing that like they had to like talk her into it. Like it was, and I was like, I'm like, come on, lady, just sing your song. You're getting paid how much for this movie?
I remember she was on Fallon or something, and he like that song went to number one briefly.
Yeah.
Of course it did. And she said like she could have just like said Hunger Games in a baby voice and the song would have gone to number one. Which is like one of my favorite things I think any actor has ever said in like a boilerplate interview.
Hunger Games in a baby voice.
She's very funny. She actually she's super charming and very funny. But yeah, she's not a bad singer. It's fine.
No, she's fine. She's a nice voice. Like
yeah,
I was
it sounds
like,
nice.
She sounds like a person under pressure singing. In outside, like it's fine.
Well, it's also, I mean, that her nervousness carries through well to the scene because she does not want to sing in that scene.
Right.
This is a thing that's being demanded by an AVOX, and she feels bad.
Foggy Nelson is like, hey, sing
Foggy
me song.
Nelson. We could say his name, but at what cost?
But at what cost? He's Foggy. Here's a bit of trivia I bet you didn't know. Jennifer Lawrence and Woody Harrelson were pretty much always goofing around.
Is that on the trivia? Is that on IMDb?
No, it is on BuzzFeed's 9 things you didn't know about the making of Mockingjay Part 1.
I'm sorry, that's not like a fun factor. That just seems like a thing that would occur.
I'd be worried if they weren't goofing around. Like, I'd be weird.
They got to get some levity in there, you know?
Yeah. But I did want to say there's a couple of moments that I get why they did, because they needed to just sort of telegraph something really quickly to the audience, but that honestly made me laugh out loud when they were supposed to make me like feel hurt or sadness. And that was, and I can't remember what the second one was, but the first one is when PETA is on TV and he calls for the peace. He's like, calls for the lay down your arm, stop fighting. And all of a sudden, like, people, it's in the cafeteria.
It's really funny.
And people just are going, traitor, 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 kill him. Oh, kill him. We should, execute him. And I'm like,
it's like
no,
literal
you
booing.
Yeah, they're like, boo.
People are throwing their lunch trays. It's pretty funny.
Like in reality, like he'd do that and people would be like, holy crap. What? Like, what? Like I can see outrage. Like, they're ready to like rip the thing off the wall and like throw it. I was like, okay, you're playing for the cheap seats right now. But again, I understand. Like they had to like let the audience know right off that people aren't happy with this.
Yeah.
Although it seems like it's clear that PETA is under duress.
Yeah. This is a thing that it is more obvious in the movie than it is in the book that things are not going so great for PETA. Like it is. I think it is way more clear here because we can see him and we can see how awful he looks. And that everything he's saying is very, like, tight and controlled and not him.
Even though in every scene he looks worse, but they've also done him up more.
Yeah, he's like a little shinier.
Yep, he has more makeup. His hair is a little weirder. He looks more and more like a capital person. It's really creepy and unsettling.
It's good. There was somebody else on styling in this movie. Like, they switched it up. Somebody else did the costume design. It's a team of two people who go only by their first names. But it's not Bird and Birdie. It's not the people who do. And it's not Daniels. I'm not going to be able to find who it is.
It's not Castor and Pollux.
It is not Castor and Pollux. It's Castor and Pollux from the film Face Off. And it's, no, I mean, like, again, I like the costume design here. I like that everybody has their own flourishes on their jumpsuits. Effie, it, like, cuts hers up and turns it into, like, a tunic, basically. Yeah. It's really good. Yeah.
Did you know that Jennifer Lawrence's wig in this movie cost $30,000?
I didn't, and I'm sad now.
It cost $30,000 because she didn't want to dye her hair again. This is the point where Jennifer Lawrence is now saying, I'm not going to wear your stupid makeup, like to the X-Men people. She's at that point now where she's like, if you want me to play Mystique again, and I understand that I am contractually obligated to do that, she is going to choose to look like Jennifer Lawrence for the majority of the film. And if you want me to look blue, you're just going to CGI over me. Like, because she had the clout.
This, you should cut this. When X-Men Apocalypse is being promoted in New York, the posters for it were Apocalypse choking Mystique.
Uh-huh.
And that was all you saw. It was just an enormous man choking a tiny woman. And this was like on top of cabs. It was so weird. And also, like, garbage movie, just like a trash fire film. But that didn't, I don't think that compelled a lot of people to, like, run out to the theater.
I want to go see the movie where who was it that played
Oscar Isaac.
Oscar Isaac chokes out. How many movies does she get her neck grabbed in? She gets a lot of movies.
Surprisingly, I know. Like, surprisingly high percentage of movies in which she stars.
When I took Willow, when Willow was little, I took her to see Curious George in the theater, the Will Ferrell voicing the Man with the Yellow Hat movie. Fell asleep during it. But before the movie started, all these, like, kindergarten-age kids and their parents are, like, gathered outside the theater just waiting for the doors to open so we could go in and sit down. And right outside the doors to the Curious George auditorium is a giant, like, 8 foot, 7 or 8 foot tall, very wide stand-up for the Hills Have Eyes remake. The poster for which is a woman having her face pressed into the ground by a dirty hand with tears coming out of her eyes. So we're standing there the whole time, and there's, like, this 5 foot tall, terrified woman face being, like, held down to the ground. It was,
I need to look this up.
So uncomfortable. And the kids were like, what's going on?
Oh, I'm looking at this up right now. I'm sorry. It's really important.
There's a couple of different ones. There's, like, the PG one and, like, the harder one. And it's the harder one. Hills Have Eyes remake poster.
This is so much work. You know, the original is incredible. Really good stuff. Yeah, that's horrible. That's awful.
Yeah. You see that?
Yeah.
You see the way her face is being pushed out?
Do you want to buy it for $9.99 plus $6.50 shipping?
What I love is that there's several different Hills Have Eyes posters with that image. Some of them, she's facing up, and it looks like the hand is just pushing her into the side of the poster. I wonder how they decided which one they were going to go with. That was, I don't know what reminded me of that.
Because I was talking about posters where women are being hurt.
Yeah. We've seemed to have stopped doing that with our posters.
I also think, like, X-Men Apocalypse came out, I think, coinciding with the Me Too movement getting very loud, like, much louder. So it felt weird to see, like, a woman being thrown around by a man on, like, a poster for a big ticket movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm now looking. I'm going to see if I can find the names of these people who did the costumes. Kurt and Bart are the names of these.
Kurt and Bart.
Kurt and Bart is known for Smoggy J Part 1, Smoggy J Part 2, and Stoker. So they've actually done some pretty, like, high profile.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Like, why would they? Why would they?
Since then, this was like their breakout, basically.
Here's a little bit of trivia you probably didn't know.
Probably not know.
While many people think the characters Castor and Pollux are related to Face Off 1997, the names are actually taken from Greek mythology. They are twin brothers that are transformed into the constellation Gemini. While many people think the characters Castor... No. Whoever wrote this thought that that was the case, and they looked it up and they were like, well, I'll be.
That's not... I'm, like, the number one Face Off defender, like, America's preeminent Face Off Scholar. I knew those names were not from the film Face Off originally.
There's nothing quite like scrolling near the bottom of IMDb trivia. Like, the top ones are frequently like, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You get near the bottom and it's like, this movie was released on Jenna Malone's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Jenna Malone. Have you noticed The Hunger Games has been in the news a lot?
I know that, what's his face? Finnick himself has been in the news a lot because he's coming out
Finnick
with a new
today,
show.
Jenna Malone, actually, like, that's dark. The suffered some sort of assault while filming The Hunger Games. So
I did not hear that.
I heard that today. The man who played, yeah, Sam Claflin said that he thought Finnick deserved a better death. True. A lot going on.
Yeah,
let's
he's
unpack.
Got a...
Are you talking about this movie?
Well, now I'm looking up this very sad Jenna Malone story.
Yeah, don't read it right now.
Ugh.
I know.
Well, that's no good. I'm sorry, Jenna Malone.
And Jenna Malone is in this movie for 15 seconds?
Yeah. I mean, I assume she's more in the second movie.
She's in the second movie a lot, yes.
Yeah, they filmed these back to back. Interesting in that they filmed Catching Fire. Wrapped on that. They already knew they were heading into this one. They had to edit Catching Fire and put it to bed before they started in on this one, which was a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Because that's a huge movie. And they were talking in the interview with the producer. She was just like, fortunately, they nailed it pretty much the first go around.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if they had to reshoot anything, they would have had to push all this back. They probably would have had to recast some roles because people's schedules were so tight. Like, the fact that they were able to just pump out. But when I heard that, I was like, I wonder how much better Catching Fire would be if they had been able to fine-tune it a little bit more.
Yeah. Fine-tune was the phrase I was going to use, too. Because this movie is impeccably edited. This movie moves. Like, it goes at a clip. And that doesn't mean there aren't, like, longer, more meditative scenes, because there are.
Yeah.
It's just that they flow together so well. There are a few things that miss a little bit for me, but they aren't to do with the production for the most part. There's one scene where the way Jennifer Lawrence acts it is so weird to me. It's in the back half of the movie. It's after Finnick is doing his, like, revelations on camera. When she keeps saying President Snow over and over again, it sounds really strange.
It was probably because she and Woody Harrelson were goofing around.
So this is a thing that happens where she says, like, to get his attention, that she should speak directly to him from their broadcast.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's like the one revision they make that is very strange. I'm not sure that it falls flat, but I'm not sure how well it works.
It's weird that they have her say President Snow like 100 times.
She says it so many times. See, that's the thing. I'm not even sure it's that she's saying it strangely. I think it's the thing where you hear something over and over again and it sounds less like words the longer you hear it.
I have this image of Snow on the other end just being like, I'm just going to see how long she'll just keep saying President Snow, which I guess, I don't know. The whole point of it was to distract him. So if he was distracted during that time, it's annoying. It's like a little kid, like, poking you over and over again. Like, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. Like, even if you're ignoring them, you're still not getting anything done.
They just needed a little more Donald Sutherland in this movie. Like, this was the decision they made. They're like, this is how we're putting him in. There's also going to be a part where his granddaughter, who wears the Katniss braid, is touching her braid nervously while she notices that, oh no, my grandfather is evil.
His granddaughter is not featured in this movie, is she?
You see her face once.
There was a scene with her that was cut.
Okay. You see her face once because she has to nervously touch the braid, be like, oh no.
That's right. In the very beginning of the movie, you were supposed to see her talking to Snow over, like, pitch-a-phone. And she was like, can I meet him? Can I meet him? And he's like, not now, not now, dear. And he hangs up with her. And then PETA walks in. And he's like, sit down. They have this long scene. And it's the scene where he tells PETA to call for the ceasefire. And PETA says, are you asking me to tell the people da-da-da-da? And President Snow says, I'm not asking you. And it's an interesting scene between the two of them. Unnecessary,
yeah.
Like, as all get out.
Not necessary. I think it's good that they cut that. I do like the idea of the two of them interacting, because we don't get that at all.
I like the idea of his granddaughter being like a PETA fan, like having like
you be
like a PETA poster on her wall. Like he says, I think he says like he hangs up on her. Then PETA walks in and he's like, "Sorry to keep you waiting. It's good. I'm having to like beat off your fans or something." Like, like he refers to her as a fan, and
that's weird.
I was like, "That's interesting." It's Donald Sutherland. He can pull off anything. I want to talk about Mahershala Ali.
Let's talk about Mahershala Ali, because in the book, Boggs is he's my favorite new character. I think he's great. I think he does a lot with a little, if that's a thing that a character who's been written could do. And here he is played by another masterclass performer, Mahershala Ali, and I had forgotten this fully because he was not super famous yet.
When did you first become aware of Mahershala Ali?
Moonlight.
Okay.
And I don't know, like, I'm not sure that's like the first thing I saw him in, but this I just didn't make the association here because it's not a huge role. Is my heat going? My heat's going. I didn't think it was going to this time. No. Yeah. It's not a huge role, but it has impact, and he's one of the first people that you see in the movie.
Yes. He's the one who comes and gets Katniss, right?
Yes. Katniss is doing the start over, remember, and then listing all of the, like, reminding herself, like, I'm Katniss Everdeen, you know, the things that trauma victim does.
Yeah. I think I must have first seen him in Predators.
Interesting.
But I don't remember that movie. And I guess the first time I ever saw him in something was, I mean, it must have been Moonlight. Like, that must have been Moonlight. And then I guess he's in Hidden Figures, but I don't remember that movie.
He's really
well.
Good in Hidden Figures. He plays Viola Davis's love interest.
I saw that movie in the theater. It went in one ear and out the other.
Oh, it's such a nice movie.
It's a nice movie. I thought it was a nice movie. Like,
yeah,
I was like,
it's a nice movie. How
do you take the story of those three women and still make Superman's dad the hero at the end? Like,
I can't
even think of his name. What's his name?
Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner, Superman's dad.
This is not a hidden figures
podcast. He rips off the sign. He's all,
This is not a hidden figures podcast.
He's not even a real person. They wrote a new white guy in. They're like, we gotta come make up a new white guy. Hidden figures.
So plenty of white men in the space program.
Into the Spider-Verse. You know what I really like Mahershala Ali in a movie I really like? Alita Battle Angel.
I've never seen that movie.
An amazing movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, you love that.
Unfortunately,
movie.
It ends on a cliffhanger.
Not to do that.
It sets up the next movie perfectly. And Mitzi was all, oh, wow. Ooh, what's going to happen next? And I was like, unfortunately, they're never going to make another leader. Actually, they just announced they might be making a new one because you can just CG everyone's faces. But
it's true.
He has a smallish role, but he's very good in it.
He's always good. He's always commanding. Quiet and reserved in this role because that's kind of the Boggs character that they worked with. It's like, let's not have him make jokes. Let's have him speak occasionally and have it have a lot of power. And it works. It works well. He's like powerful and commanding without being particularly intimidating. Katniss comes around on him pretty quickly, but we don't see a lot of that yet.
Right. And he's got to be played by someone who you believe could lead an army, but also you believe could like secretly be on the side of our hero.
And
he just has the perfect demeanor for it. He's a very reassuring presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he and Gail, a couple of the first people who pop up in this movie. This is a very Gale-heavy movie.
Good, because none of the other movies have had a lot of Gale in them.
I know. They really went all in on Gale this time. And I think it's to their benefit, because Gale is, like, Liam Hemsworth is good in this.
Mm-hmm.
We get to see him act more. He's still kind of doing his same thing. Like, he is pretty, I want to say, reserved. Let's say he's holding back. But he's not a particularly bombastic actor, and I think that works really well for what he's supposed to be doing here.
Yeah.
Which is convincing Katniss that she should also fight back.
What did you think of the casting of Sarita Chaudhry as Egeria?
as a character that doesn't exist in the books.
What did you, did she live up to your
she's a good actor.
Like, oh, she's a very good actor.
Yeah, I like her a lot. This is not the only thing I've seen her in. I don't know why she's here.
Yeah.
But I'll accept that Stowe has like a right-hand woman who's doing his dirty work and that looks like, who looks fabulous while she's doing it because she's impeccably styled.
I feel like at this point, there were actors, they were just like, we got two more movies. Anyone you want to work with? And like, this, some names came up and they were just like, get them in here. We'll put them into a part. Like, this could be played by Joe anybody, but we'll get, you know, we'll get a great British actor to play this, role. But
they were right to do so because she's good. She's more memorable than someone else would have been.
Evan Ross, who plays Masala, is, you know, he doesn't have a whole lot to do, but he's there and he's well directed. And
yeah, he's on the battlefield. We see the most of him and all of the camera crew, both when they go to District 12 is when they do that. Yeah. And when they go to District 8, go to the hospital and it gets bombed. And that's maybe my favorite translation of page to screen. Like, I think that's done. Oh, I think it's done exceptionally well. It feels like it moves at the same clip that bit in the book does. And I think that's some of the better writing in the book, too.
To me, the hospital scene, I felt they pulled their punches a little bit with the actual destruction of it. I didn't want to see like body parts.
I was going to say, I wasn't mad about that. I'm kind of okay with it.
I felt like some of they were so far away from the hospital by the time it blew up that they were like, oh, what's that over there? And like the hospital blew up and I was like, I just envisioned them being like closer to it, closer to the carnage. Again, I don't need see carnage, but.
Well, that's fair though. Like, because there are three great, I mean, like Jennifer Lawrence is good throughout this movie. Shocker that she's good at this. Her doing the "if we burn, you burn with us" speech is like, I think, one of the best things she does here. It's that, it's her realizing that Gail and PETA might both die and sobbing about it.
Yeah.
And it's her face as she listens to Coyne. Like, these things. This is her reel for this movie.
I forgot to mention that the scene where Snow is talking to his granddaughter, it begins with him watching Catching Fire. He's watching PETA and Katniss hug after PETA's been brought back to life by Finnick. And she's like, oh, you were dead. But it's just Catching Fire. Like, it's the same angles. And there's like a cut between like angles, which clearly it's the Hunger Games. Like, they would have cameras set up.
Yeah.
They do. But it's just, it's one of those moments in a movie, much like in Catching Fire when they look at the locket and it's just production stills. You're like, you're just watching Catching Fire.
It's a little
at this
less
point.
Hilarious than the locket, I will say.
Also, it's funny to me that like Snow just sits around in his office like watching old Hunger Games.
It's his legacy.
Yeah, I guess.
You haven't read the book yet.
I haven't read the book yet. Don't give it away. Patina Miller as Commander Paler, who has a bigger role in part two, I know.
Yes. Also, this is here it feels like a waste of Patina Miller's talent.
Quick
brag. I saw her play the witch in Into the Woods. It's pretty good.
I bet.
It's incredible. Yeah.
Did you see her, though, in The Many Saints of Newark?
I didn't. I heard it was wonderful.
Did you see her on All My Children?
Yes. No.
Were you a big fan of the role of Pam Henderson's 30-episode run?
I know that all of my friends who were going to shows before I was saw her in Pippin.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was like, wasn't that a big, she won an award for that one?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. She won the Tony
won
Award, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, strangely enough, she won an Emmy for it. It doesn't make any sense. Pippin, a musical I don't like.
Yeah, Reeve Carney was in this production, so I didn't go. That's not really why I didn't go.
People love Pippin. Like, I know it's a favorite musical of many people. I know that Alana really likes Pippin. I just don't like.
People do it at karaoke.
What do they do at karaoke?
We've got magic to do. Isn't that like the opening number? I don't know.
Oh, I thought they would do Corner of the Sky.
I'm going to do Clown of the Sky at karaoke. It's like nighttime recording, FYI.
Stephen Schwartz, he's a talented songwriter, but his style has not changed from Godspell to today.
Oh, no, absolutely it hasn't.
You could take any song from Wicked, put it in Godspell, and you would not know it was not supposed to be in there, and vice versa. Corner of the Sky, Defying Gravity, they're the same song. And all the characters sing the same way. I'm just a Stephen. I have problems with Stephen Schwartz.
He's fine. I will die happy about Avenue Q winning Best Musical over Wicked.
Yeah, but talk about a musical that hasn't aged well.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, a regional theater will be like, "We're doing Avenue Q," and I'm like, "Ooh, seriously?"
Isn't it New World Stages, like off of like one of the big off Broadway houses for like until maybe last year or the year before?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff gets done a lot.
A lot of stuff does get done a lot. So Mockingjay Part 1.
Mockingjay Part 1. Big hit movie.
It's really good. I don't have that much more to say about how good it is, except that it's really good.
Great score by James Newton Howard.
It
pulls
really,
out all the
doing the absolute most when I watched it. I amend that. He's doing precisely the correct amount.
Shortest film so far, only 2 hours long.
Zippy. Downright
yep,
zippy.
I appreciated that. I was confused when I watched it on Prime because the Prime movie is 4 hours long.
It says
long.
That it's 4 hours long. Also was confused by that.
Because the last 2 hours are the making of, which is pretty cool.
I didn't watch this one.
I sort of skimmed around, but I did watch the 10-minute tribute to Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Understandable.
Who died a week before filming ended. And if you want to get choked up, watch all the actors talk about what a great guy he is.
Yeah.
I guess like a few weeks after, because this is for like the EPK, like, and there is just, they're all talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman. Surprise, surprise. They all loved him. Working with him was amazing. And they all missed it. Like,
there's an in loving memory of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Ahead of the credits.
Yeah, there's a few things he didn't get to film, and they just gave the lines to different characters, which is fine.
Yeah, they were smart. I mean, it feels like a very weird thing to praise, but they did. They worked around it in a way that is not noticeable. Like, feels pretty invisible. He's wonderful in this movie, customarily. He's really good. Really brings across the kind of like capital sleaze that Plutarch hasn't been able to shed while still being like fairly sympathetic, like still like an, oh, I get where this guy is coming from character.
He gets the funniest line in the movie. He upstages the funniest line in the book because when Katniss is filming her promo, he loses his temper and yells at her like, "You just came from the battlefield," and he does it so he's so funny.
Him directing her is really good. I'm glad that that's like, I like how they retooled all of that, because then Effie has a presence in addition to Plutarch having it.
Yeah,
and we do still get this is how a revolution dies,
but it's not as funny because Philip Seymour Hoffman was already funny.
Yeah, he's funnier, he's better.
Yeah, and that's because he and Jennifer Lawrence like improvised a lot, and they let them like build a lot of their scenes.
Really?
Yeah, they were just like, just work out these like scenes like that. They were like, just improv, work it out, we'll film a bunch of stuff, make it a good scene, because they trusted Philip Seymour Hoffman. They're like, yeah, like, and this is like the fourth movie he did with Julianne Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like, yeah, he's just like, every time he's on the set, he's just amazing. He put together costume stuff for Plutarch that like he brought in just wearing, and they'd be like, "I can't believe you put this much thought into your character. Like, what's in his pockets?" He's one of those actors.
Oh.
Like, what would the guy have in his pockets? Like, if I'm going to stick my hands in my pockets, there's going to be something in there that he would have. Like, he's that kind of actor. And it's just he embodies, I wouldn't even say he embodies the role. He creates a whole new character.
Yeah, he took a character that is on the page, like actually, especially on the playing field of the Hunger Games, which doesn't have that many flat characters. Plutarch's a pretty flat character in the books. In the movies, he is more well-rounded than most of the other people in the room.
Yeah, he's haunted, he's funny, you get to see him be terrified during they ramp up the bombing of District 13 a lot. Like,
good segment. good stuff. Like, I just want to throw like a few more compliments out there. I think like Sam Claflin's really good in this again. The interview he did about being Finnick, mentioned that he's mortified about his accent work. Like he said, it's very, very bad. I thought it was great. Like in light of that interview, I was like, I don't hear what he's hearing.
No, I mean, I never had a problem with Finnick's accent.
I mean, I think part of it is that he has this affect of being very fancy boy.
And all the characters have kind of weird accents because it's the future. And
yes,
they've lived in weird places. To me, it doesn't matter because this isn't modern times.
Right.
And like Elizabeth Banks's accent is what even is it? It doesn't
no
make
one
any
knows.
Sense. I do want to read to you, though, a headline from an article from 2013.
Yes.
That is prescient, that is relevant.
Okay.
The headline is, Kurt Russell, my son turned down Hunger Games for 21 Jump Street 2.
Well,
Wyatt
all right.
Russell turned down a part in Mockingjay. I don't know. He had to turn down Hunger Games Part 3 and 4 to do it. While he also reveals his son is also being lined up to star in the film adaptation of Greg Allman's biography. Did that ever happen? Did we ever get the Wyatt Russell, Greg Allman biopic? They're trying to get this Allman Brothers movie made. They want him, Wyatt, to play Dwayne Allman, the group's guitarist, who was killed in a motorcycle accident in 1971. That's the end of the article. There's an article on contactmusic.com that's an interview with Kurt Russell about how his son was almost in the Hunger Games.
I fully forgot that Wyatt Russell was like a person and indeed an actor until you've brought this up. Because he's the only thing I've seen of it is The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, and he's fine in that.
I think he's pretty good. I mean, I was distracted by his face because he just looks like Kurt Russell's son. And that's really
distracting. Oh, I thought he looked like the guy from Up. He looks like the old man from Up. He has a completely square face.
He does have a very square face.
He's a handsome guy.
Well, yeah.
I'm not going
to
like...
difficult to not be handsome, given the parentage.
that's true.
Fighting
that's
against
unfair.
Genetics really hard.
It's very unfair to all of us.
Yeah. Remember how cute Kurt Russell is in The Thing? The best looking man on film.
You remember how cute Kurt Russell was in The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes?
So adorable.
It's so weird that he was a child actor.
Kurt Russell has been... cute.
Yeah. So Hunger Games Mockingjay. It opened up, made $700 million.
Profitable movie, yeah.
Yeah. And
good.
They geared us up for the next one.
What's the next
one called? Lord selected all the music for the soundtrack.
Yeah, and the song that plays over the credits is a Lord song.
It's a Lord song.
It's fine. Well, these did a friend of the show, Cass, just called it the Twilight formula, which is where you do like the album that is like music inspired by. Like they really brought that back. Obviously, that's a thing that's been done for years and years and years. But this is where they're doing it like with hip indie music.
Yeah.
Twilight really perfected the art. And they did also include some of the songs in the movie, including like the pivotal Muse's supermassive black hole over the vampire baseball scene.
Right.
Can't wait till we cover Twilight.
During the release of the film, there were protests in Thailand and protests in Hong Kong in Catalonia. The Hong Kong and Thailand protests led to this movie being canceled there. No, in Thailand. In Hong Kong, I believe it went ahead and eventually played, but protesters were using the three-finger salute in their protests. And so that endorsed political ramifications for the movie. I guess it was released in 3D.
That sounds right.
So that would explain why you get to see the Mockingjay at the end turn into all the different logos in 3D coming
at you.
It's
really good.
And it did really well. It received a lot of great praise. People really liked this movie. Even though The Hollywood Report, no, Time Magazine, Richard Corliss said, Lawrence isn't given much opportunity to do anything spectacularly right here.
I don't think that's true.
I was like, what are you,
actually,
did you
flatly
watch the movie?
Disagree with that specific critique.
Like, what movie is he watching? She's all over the place in this movie.
She's so good in this movie. Like, I don't think there's a misnote minus the number of times she has to say President Snow, and I don't think that was her decision.
Okay, if you want to know when this movie came out, though. This soundtrack. We've got Chvrches. We've got Charlie XCX. We've got Ariana Grande. We've got Lorde. We've got Bat for Lashes.
Oh, that's what's carbon dating it for me.
We've got the Chemical Brothers and Miguel with uncredited vocals from Lorde. And then we have Jennifer Lawrence singing The Hanging Tree in the extended version. I believe that one of the Hunger Games soundtracks, I think it's the one music inspired by the Hunger Games, has a Decemberist song on it.
That sounds right.
And I'm like, I remember when that happened, I was like, I can't think of anything less Hunger Games-y than the Decemberists. Like, it just doesn't seem like those would be the first people against the wall.
They're like, no, again, I'm gonna keep wanting to reference the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, so we need to get through this next episode.
Oh, and The Hanging Tree was, the music for The Hanging Tree was composed by the Lumineers. So,
of course it was.
That is why it sounds weird to me.
The Lumineers and the Decemberists dress like they live in District 12. I do want to point that out.
No, they dress like they live in the Capitol, play acting like they live in District.
Okay, fair.
But I was going to say, I had a problem with... Also, I'm used to the audiobook version of the song, but
yeah,
it sounded a little too pop to me.
It sounds happier than it is. And it's not the Ben Folds phenomenon of like the most depressing music or lyrics set to the poppiest music. It just sounds like a little too hopeful.
Now I wish Ben Folds had done all the music for this. Just
I would
this
listen to Ben Folds sing The Hanging Tree and I'd be happy about it.
Snarky, glasses-wearing dick, like, doodling on his piano, being like, Katniss! Peanuts!
You just have a Ben Folds impression in your back pocket at all times.
I do. Hanging out in District 12. Looking for my sister's cat. Bring her down to District 13. Playing with the light. I listen to a lot of Ben Folds.
Same. The cat being shoved in the bag and making a lot of noise while it's in the bag, and then me taking it out of the bag. Really good stuff.
Really fun cat business.
Really goofy cat business. They literally save the cat in this movie, which is great.
Chasing after the flashlight, though, they do that annoying movie thing where the cat's chasing after the light, and they dub in a lot of, like,
oh, yeah, the cat doesn't. Meow. The cat is very singularly focused when that happens.
I guess what cats don't do while they're hunting.
Yeah. Maybe some chirping noises. I could have dealt with that. Buttercup is a Maine Coon, right? It has to be. That cat is enormous.
That cat's huge. Not the same cat from the first movie.
Oh, definitely
by the way.
Not. And
that cat was
this one
black.
Had to do more.
Yeah, this is a good cat.
Good cat acting. Not since Inside Llewyn Davis have we seen such remarkable cat acting.
And Donald Sutherland's dog appears in this movie.
There is a dog for 1 second.
Walking through District 12.
Yeah.
That's Donald Sutherland's dog.
Weird.
Its name? Beepers? Bleeple? Beepy? What's it called? Biggles.
That's not even any less weird than what you just said.
Donald Sutherland, the dog wandering in District 12 is Donald Sutherland's dog, Biggles. Can you put my dog in it? Kiefer gave me this dog.
They just let him do whatever he wanted, didn't they?
Can we get that dog upset? Nobody touches my dog. Just leave the dog in.
It's kind of cute.
Hmm?
This is like pops in.
You know, it's not cute, all the skeletons they're walking over.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That also reminded me of in Avatar The Last Airbender, something Aang sees in the very first episode is like a pile of bones. It's very that.
There's something just very just like, I wasn't expecting the field of skeletons. And then for them to be like, yeah, they just firebombed everyone where they stood. You're standing on your friends and neighbors. It does not have, of course, because the character is not in the movies, the scene that really just kind of broke me in the book, which is where she sees the mayor's house and the body of like the mayor and her friend. And they're just
burned to a crisp.
It's a
little sad that Madge didn't make it to the movies. Like, I understand that they wanted Prim to have given her the Mockingjay pen, but...
But, yeah. Who needs her?
Not these
Prim.
Movies, that's for sure.
I mean Prim.
Oh. Prim is 500 years old now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. She's like 6'7".
She's so tall.
They have
tall.
Her like sort of walking with a hunch. Yeah. Girl had a growth spurt between films.
Between every film. Like she yeah. looks, again, so much older.
Yeah. She like has a nightmare or someone has a nightmare and she wakes up.
Yeah.
And she like shuffles over and she's like, can I sleep with you? Move over. I'll get in bed with you.
Cannot. I'm trying to find an indication of how are Willow Shields and Jennifer Lawrence friends is one of the questions. I'm going to go with probably not.
Maybe
no.
Not? No. Yeah. I think that you probably have a better response looking up. Is Willow Shields eating Jennifer Lawrence's dust?
I don't like how easy it was for me to find like multiple conflicting reports about how tall Willow Shields is. Oh,
well, she's still growing.
Okay, that's fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's her friend's name? Billow.
I clicked away already. Sitting poured it up to me. Autumn Shields.
Aww.
Yeah.
Nature-y.
She also has 887,000
Autumn Shields sounds like a feminine hygiene
Instagram.
Product.
What do people do all day?
You didn't hear my
I'm
bad
sorry.
Comment. I said that Autumn Shields sounds like a feminine hygiene product.
What if I had heard it and I had just decided that I didn't?
You're like, I'm not going to justify that with a response. And on that note, should we wrap this puppy
yeah,
up?
Yeah, we probably should, but what were we saying goodbye to?
Ben Folds.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can do that. I haven't
should we say goodbye
to
Ben Folds?
Goodbye, Ben Folds.
Goodbye, Ben Folds. Listen to us on
oh, yeah,
Twitter.
Yeah,
find us
plugs.
On Twitter and find us on Facebook. We'll go to Facebook.
Okay.
Goodbye, Ben Folds.
Bye, Ben Folds.
Professional.